To talk more about the crisis in Ukraine and the NATO summit, we're joined by Stephen Cohen, professor emeritus of Russian studies and politics at New York University and Princeton University, also the author of a number of books on Russia and the Soviet Union. His latest piece in The Nation is headlined, Patriotic Heresy Versus the New Cold War, Neo-McCarthyites Have Stifled Democratic Debate on Russia and Ukraine. So, welcome to Democracy Now!, Professor Cohen. Talk about the latest developments, both the decisions out of NATO and what's happening on the ground in Ukraine.
One latest development is related to what Juan just said about New York kids. There are about a million refugees from eastern Ukraine. Most of them haven't fled to Russia, a lot of kids. Traditionally, in Ukraine and Russia, the first day of school is September 1. There are about 50,000 to 70,000 kids who needed to have started school. The Russians have made every effort to get them in school, but there are a lot of little Ukrainian kids who won't be going to school this September yet because they're living in refugee camps. And that's the story, of course. This is a horrific, tragic, completely unnecessary war in eastern Ukraine. In my own judgment, we have contributed mightily to this tragedy. I would say that historians one day will look back and say that America has blood on its hands. 3,000 people have died, most of them civilians who couldn't move quickly. That's women with small children, older women, a million refugees. Talk of a ceasefire that might go into place today, which would be wonderful, because nobody else should die for absolutely no reason. But what's driving the new developments? Partially the NATO meeting in Wales, but this stunning development that Juan mentioned, reported in the New York Review of Books, though a handful of us in this country have been trying to get it into the media for nearly 2 weeks, is that it appeared that the Ukrainian army would conquer eastern Ukraine. But what they were doing is sitting outside the cities, bombarding these cities with aircraft, rockets, heavy artillery. That's what caused the 3,000 deaths and the refugees. They've seriously damaged the entire infrastructure, industrial infrastructure of Ukraine, which is in these eastern cities of Donetsk and Luhansk, the so-called Donbas region. It turned out, though, that the Ukrainian army didn't want to enter these cities where the rebels were embedded, ensconced. It's their homes. These fighters are mainly from these cities. And while this killing was going on, the rebels were regrouping. Now, there's an argument. How much help did they get from Russia? Some people are saying Russia invaded. Others say, no, Russia just gave them some technical and organizational support. But whatever happened in the last 10 days, there's been one of the most remarkable military turnarounds we've witnessed in many years. And the Ukrainian army is not only being defeated, but it's on the run. It's fleeing. It wants no more of this. It's leaving its heavy equipment behind. It's really in full-scale retreat, except in one place, the city Juan mentioned, Mariupol, where there's a fight going on as we talk now. The rebels have the city encircled. Whether that fighting will stop if the ceasefire is announced in the next couple hours, we don't know. It's a very important city, but everything has now changed. If there's negotiation, the government of Ukraine, Poroshenko, the president, our President Obama, and NATO thought that when negotiations began, the West would dictate the terms to Putin because they won the war in Ukraine. Now it's the reverse.
Now, what about this whole issue of United States forces now actually being introduced into exercises in Ukraine? To what degree do you see the Obama administration being drawn more and more into the conflict?
Well, we have to ask ourselves, because we don't fully know, because Obama is a kind of aloof figure who disappears in moments like this and reappears and says kind of enigmatic things. But are we being drawn into it, or are we driving these events? It has been true ever since NATO was created that the United States controlled NATO. Now, it is also true now that that NATO is deeply divided on the Ukrainian issue. There's a war party, and the war party is led by Poland, the three Baltic states, to a certain extent Romania, but not so much, and Britain. Then there's a party that wants to accommodate Russia, that thinks that this is not entirely Russia's fault. And moreover, these people, the Germans, the French, the Spanish, the Italians, depend on Russia in many ways for their economic prosperity. They want to negotiate, not punish Russia. Where is Obama in this? It would appear nowhere, except occasionally he comes in, as he did in Estonia, was it yesterday, the day before, and seemed to give a speech that favors the war party.
Let's go to the comments of President Obama when he was in the former Soviet Republic of Estonia, blaming Russia for the fighting and vowing to defend the Baltic states.
It was not the government of Kiev that destabilized eastern Ukraine. It's been the pro-Russian separatists who are encouraged by Russia, financed by Russia, trained by Russia, supplied by Russia, and armed by Russia. And the Russian forces that have now moved into Ukraine are not on a humanitarian or peacekeeping mission. They are Russian combat forces with Russian weapons in Russian tanks.
That's President Obama,
yeah,
Professor Stephen Cohen.
It certainly is Professor Obama. President Obama, look, here's the underlying problem. What Obama just said implies, if not asserts, that if it wasn't for Russia, Ukraine would be stable, that Russia's destabilized Ukraine. No serious person would believe that to be the case. Ukraine is in the throes of a civil war, which was precipitated by the political crisis that occurred in Ukraine last November and then this February, when the elected president of Ukraine was overthrown by a street mob. And that set off a civil war, primarily between the West, including Kiev, and the East. But not only. There's a central Ukraine that's here and there. The civil war then became, as I said it would or might when we first start talking earlier this year, a proxy war between the United States and Russia. Now, it's absolutely true that Russia has made the destabilization of Ukraine worse. It's also absolutely true that the United States has contributed to the destabilization of Ukraine. But if tomorrow the United States would go away and Russia would go away, Ukraine would still be in a civil war. And we know what civil wars are. We had one in our country. Russia had one. There were many civil wars around the world in the 20th century and elsewhere today. The point is, the only way you can end a civil war, either one side completely conquers and the other side gives up, as happened with the Confederacy in the United States, or there's a stalemate, or somebody says enough killing, because these are brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers, they're part of the same family, and you negotiate. So we will see later today, perhaps, or tomorrow, whether this ceasefire comes and if it holds. Now, negotiating a civil war is terribly complex. In some ways, we're still arguing about the American Civil War. I grew up in Kentucky, segregated Kentucky, and in my childhood, people were still claiming we, the South, won. So this isn't going to end if the United States and Russia goes away. But both sides have the capacity to get these negotiations going. But when Obama says that Russia destabilized Ukraine, it's a half-truth.
Well, Steve Cohen, I want to ask you, you've come under some criticism by other Russia experts in the U.S. as being being an apologist for the Russian intervention in Ukraine. I think in Forbes magazine op-ed piece there claimed that you were questioning whether Ukraine had the right to exercise control over its own territory, that it was plotting to seize its own territory. I'm wondering your response to that criticism.
Yeah, I mean, many very harsh and unpleasant, probably libelous and slanderous things have been said about me, which suggests to me that they have no factual response to me. Rather than call me a toady and an apologist and a paid hiring of the Kremlin, I'd like to hear what factual mistakes I've made. And I haven't seen any because I'm a scholar and I try not to make factual mistakes. It's not about whether Ukraine has the right to take back its territory. The problem is, as I just said, that a civil war began when we, the United States and Europe, backed a street coup that overthrew an elected president. When you overthrow a constitution, and when you overthrow a president, you're likely to get a civil war. It usually happens. Now, when you have a civil war, the country's divided. And in this case, the government in Kiev is trying to conquer where the rebels, so to speak, are located. The problem is that the rebel provinces do not recognize the legitimacy of the government in Kiev. The United States recognizes the legitimacy, but that doesn't make it legitimate. Now, let's go to what's going on in Kiev now. I mean, Obama also said, and I kind of chuckled and cried, that we're helping Ukraine build a democracy. What kind of democracy is unfolding in Kiev? All right, they had a presidential election. About a fifth of the country couldn't vote. Now, Poroshenko has called a parliamentary election in October, a month from now. But where the war is, in the south and the east, they won't vote. So you're going to end up with a rump country, further dividing the country. Meanwhile, they're shutting down democracy in Kiev. Communist Party is being banned. Another party that represents the east is being banned. People are being arrested. There's censorship kicking in. There's no democracy in Kiev because it's a wartime government. You usually don't get democracy. So these assertions by the United States that we're democracy builders, we're virtuous, and it's all Putin's fault, it's worse than a half-truth. It's actually a falsehood.
The possibility of Ukraine in NATO and what that means
nuclear
and what—
war.
Explain.
Next question. I mean, it's clear. It's clear. First of all, by NATO's own rules, Ukraine cannot join NATO. A country that does not control its own territory, in this case, Kiev controls less and less by the day. It's lost Crimea. It's losing the Donbass. I just described why to the war. A country that does not control its own territory cannot join Ukraine. Those are the rules. NATO. Secondly, you have to meet certain economic, political, and military criteria to join NATO. Ukraine meets none of them. Thirdly, and most importantly, Ukraine is linked to Russia not only in terms of being Russia's essential security zone, but it's linked conjugally, so to speak, intermarriage. There are millions, if not tens of millions, of Russian and Ukrainians married together. Put it in NATO, and you're going to put a barricade through millions of families. Russia will react militarily. In fact, Russia's already reacting militarily, because look what they're doing in Wales today. They're going to create a so-called rapid deployment force of 4,000 fighters. What is 4,000 fighters? 15,000 or less rebels in Ukraine are crushing a 50,000-member Ukrainian army. 4,000 against a million-man Russian army is nonsense. The real reason for creating this so-called rapid deployment force is they say it needs infrastructure. And the infrastructure, that is, in plain language, is military bases, need to be on Russia's borders. And they've said where they're going to put them, in the Baltic Republic, Poland, and Romania. Now, why is this important? Because NATO has expanded for 20 years, but it's been primarily a political expansion, bringing these countries of Eastern Europe into our sphere of political influence. Now it's becoming a military expansion. So within a short period of time, we will have a new Cold War, but here's the difference. The last Cold War, the military confrontation was in Berlin, far from Russia. Now it will be, if they go ahead with this NATO decision, right plunk on Russia's borders. Russia will then leave the historic nuclear agreement that Reagan and Gorbachev signed in 1987 to abolish short-range nuclear missiles. It was the first time a category of nuclear weapons had ever been abolished. Where are, by the way, the nuclear abolitionists today? Where's the grassroots movement, you know, free, sane? Where are these people gone to? Because we're looking at a new nuclear arms race. Russia moves these intermediate missiles now to protect its own borders as the West comes toward Russia. And the tripwire for using these weapons is enormous. One other thing. Russia has about, I think, 10,000 tactical nuclear weapons, sometimes called battlefield nuclear weapons. You use these for short distances. They can be fired. You don't need an airplane or a missile to fly them. They can be fired from artillery. But they're nuclear. They're radioactive. They've never been used. Russia has about 10,000. We have about 500. Russia's military doctrine clearly says that if Russia is threatened by overwhelming conventional forces, we will use tactical nuclear weapons. So when Obama boasts, as he has on two occasions, that our conventional weapons are vastly superior to Russia, he's feeding into this argument by the Russian hawks that we have to get our tactical nuclear weapons ready. So bring Ukraine into NATO, and all this stuff will be up and ready, and then it'll just take the shoot down of a Malaysian aircraft, about which everybody's forgotten Still nobody knows who did it. There seems to have been an agreement among the major powers not to tell us who did it, which suggests it wasn't the rebels, wasn't Russia after all. But it would take something like that, which can happen in these circumstances, to launch something that was unthinkable.
What do you mean there seems to be an agreement between the major countries?
Well, in addition to the insurance company for the airplane, which technically has legal responsibility, the major countries that are doing it, Britain has the black boxes. The Netherlands are involved. There was a report the other day that these parties, these states, have agreed that they would not divulge individually what they have discovered. Now, they've had plenty of time to interpret the black boxes. There are reports from Germany that the White House version of what happened is not true. Therefore, you have to look elsewhere for the culprit who did the shooting down. They're sitting on satellite intercepts. They have the images. They won't release the air controller's conversations in Kiev with the doomed aircraft. Why not? Did the pilot say, let me speculate, oh, my God, we're being fired on by a jet fighter next to us. What's going on? Because we know there were two Ukrainian jet fighters. We don't know, but somebody knows. You might ask, you might get somebody on who's been investigating this to find out what they actually know.
Well, we want to thank you very much.
That's a digression. I apologize.
No, that was very interesting. Thank you very much, Stephen Cohen, Professor Emeritus of Russian Studies and Politics at New York University in Princeton, author of a number of books on Russia and the Soviet Union. His latest piece in The Nation will link to Patriotic Heresy versus the New Cold War. Neo-McCarthyites have stifled democratic debate on Russia and Ukraine.